5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening, and once again, it is the new Panic Room, and it's episode 163, my giddy aunt. And, so we did miss last week, because I was out trick-or-treating. And still eating the can of chili, so that was fun. That was for me. My little girl went out as characters from The Purge, so I think we scared a few people. all good stuff. All the fun of the fair, I guess. And it is okay. Yeah, it is. It's Thursday. It's 9:30 Central Time, and this is what we do. This is my life now. This is what I do. And this is my social life. This is it. This is the sum total of my social life these days, and it would not be the same, it would not be social without...
Without that song. No, I'm
not.
Good.
No. It cheers me up as well. I hear that and it's like, oh yeah, I like that. That's jolly, just gets you right there, doesn't it?
It makes me smile. Yeah, I had a lovely Halloween too. I have never given out candy before, so it was an exciting ordeal.
Oh, did you get many?
Well, okay.
Many trick-or-treaters.
So, Thursday it started out nice. It was like 70 degrees, and then it started raining, and it dropped to like 50. I mean, it was cold.
Oh, my goodness.
And kind of rainy. But yeah, we did. We had two huge bags of candy, and we ended up having to go in when there were still kids coming because we ran out of candy. We got a lot of kids.
Well,
yeah, it was
around here. It was the quite. I mean, might be because of this. The previous 2 years, it rained a lot, and we still did it. We got soaked. But there's only a fraction around here this year that actually made an effort. I mean, down our street, it was us and the next door neighbours, and that was it. We actually went to our old neighbourhood, to our old haunts, and even that was nowhere near. India said, you know, the hall wasn't as good this year, and we actually put a like an honesty bucket out with candy, and there was actually still some left when we got home.
You know, I was very upset because I had I was giving out dots. They had, well, it was like one of the big bags where they had Tootsie Rolls and dots and all that stuff. I like the dots, and you know what? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm gonna go back to the store and I'm gonna find some dots that are cheap. Because after Halloween, and I couldn't find any. I was very sad.
No. Yeah. Well, we actually bought candy. I let India pick. On the understanding, obviously, that whatever's left, that it wouldn't go to waste, she would eat it. So we got a bag of stuff she liked. But, I mean, there wasn't a lot left, but there's still some in there. It was. I mean, we had fun, you know. Part of the fun, obviously, is certainly for the little ones, you know, picking the costume and getting dressed up and going out and doing all of that, and it's good times. I mean, I'm obviously making the most of it, but there'll come a time when, you know, she's too old for that, or she's off out partying with her friends.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of treasuring these moments. It was fun. It was fun.
My son, he was out there handing candy and hanging out candy with me. Of course, he's never done it either. I mean, we used to do like the trunk or treats or something, but for actually, you know, sitting at home handing out candy, I've never done that before. And he was with me, and it was so funny because, you know, the first time a kid came up to him, he was like, you know, and this is a public service announcement. He's and he told the kids, don't eat any candy that's unwrapped, and make sure you have a good Halloween. I forget what it was, but it was hilarious.
Oh.
I'm like, I'm thinking, did you rehearse this before you came out here or something?
He may have even written it down, a little post-it
or something. Yeah.
That is really sweet. Well, my son stayed home and played on his PlayStation because that's what he does, Although, to be fair, I think last year he went. He wasn't going to go. Then one of his mates rang and said, "Are you coming?" And he went. I think he's probably a little bit old for it now.
Sad.
Hopefully by the time India's too old, then I'll have grandkids to take. So.
That. And then we watched the boyfriend made me watch. What was that movie? The Corn, Children of the Corn. Yeah, that's
That is an old.
Yeah.
I remember watching that back in the 80s, and it was, I think they did about five sequels, you know, Children in the Corn again.
Children
in More Corn, and More Children in More Corn, and the Children in the fucking Corn again. And hey, guess where the kids are? Yeah, in the corner.
They're in the corn.
Yeah, I mean, I remember reading it might have been in Graveyard Shift? It was one of King's short stories, and it was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, not one of my favourites, I have to say, but I remember the first film being okay.
Cheesy. God, it was cheesy. But, you know, it was
Lord of the Flies in corn. Be honest,
but it was not even that long. So, I mean, I don't think they developed the story. But then again, it was a short story by Stephen King, and you know, I don't know. I think the idea for it is pretty cool. But movie.
It's like, I mean, imagine you take Lord of the Flies and you introduce adults
corn.
To the kids' days. And corn,
right,
obviously, obviously the corn. And you've got Children of the Corn, you know, you sort of extrapolated that idea. If we've got the kids, they've gone feral, What happens if suddenly adults are introduced into that environment, which makes for an interesting... I mean, he was good. Like I say, not one of my favorites, but...
Yeah, I wanted more backstory. Like, how did these kids get like this? I mean, what happened? You know, that's what I was waiting for, and we didn't really get any of that.
No.
No,
that
was
true.
I was not impressed. I stayed awake for it, but I wasn't impressed at all.
Well, it's funny. Speaking of stuff, I've been watching Crawl, the Sam Raimi giant alligator movie. And I tell you something. I mean, I'm sticking with it because it's a giant alligator. But, jeez, I must be halfway through and the alligator's just appeared.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to give it another, you know, because I tend to watch movies in sort of 40-minute segments. Because it's like, you know, I crawl into bed and it's what I use to get me to sleep. So I end up, you know, 40 minutes if I'm doing well, you know, and I'm much better. And it's like, dear me. You know, bring the alligators in already.
Yes. What do you think of watching the stupid before? Yeah,
exactly. It's a film about giants. It's like watching Sharknado, but with no sharks or nados in it, you know.
What's the point? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it'd be like me writing PEED and not having centipedes in it. You know, it's just a bunch of kids, just a bunch of students in an abandoned hotel and nothing, and nothing's happening, nothing's attacking them because I couldn't be bothered to put centipedes in it. So we don't. We don't need them. It's a book about killer centipedes, but do we really need them?
Exactly.
Do we need them? You know, as a literary hook, do we need the creatures? Probably not. No. Let's just have the kids, you know, talking about life and whatnot, you know, and see how well that goes.
Oh God, yeah, that's good though.
So, anyway, I'm gonna put you on the spot.
Into a week in the morning and I step outside and I take a deep breath and I get real high and I scream from the top of my lungs, what's going on? And I say,
Dina, hey, what is going on?
We have
big things,
yeah,
big
know.
Things, bigly
have,
things, some big, big things.
Yes.
Some really, really good things.
Some good
things.
Stuff. But, you know, we're busy.
Things.
I know that we're really, really busy. I do know that. So.
Oh, my goodness. We are, I mean, obviously, you know, being very cynical with Crimbo coming up and whatnot. And now it's funny, you know, Halloween comes and goes, and now it's a countdown to Christmas. They're playing Christmas songs in the store. Stop it! Seriously.
I'm so excited.
No! Fuck's sake, no. No,
you know,
No. I refuse to discuss the C word until at least December. We've not had Thanksgiving yet. Oh, it's just depressing. But yeah, we've got some terrific titles coming up. A whole bunch of anthologies that are all seem to be coming out at once, which is exciting.
I was going to
say, you're
going to
pretend you know what's going on now, aren't you? Mm.
Well, I do know a little bit. I just don't know exactly when things are happening, but I know I know what's happening. But the dark romance, you know, I just have to say I am so happy and I was so impressed with, you know, all the stories in there. I really, you know,
tickled,
there were some
tickled
times,
pink. Tickled pink.
I am. There are times though that, you know, you read a little bit of a story because you can't read all of them from start to finish when you're picking out submissions. You would just spend way too much time doing that. You know, I wish we could. So, you know, you read a little bit at the beginning, a little bit at the middle, a little bit at the end, and you're like, okay, that sounds, it sounds good.
But well, do you know, I do this, I will read, but some, I'm going through the submissions for the Bizarro anthology, and we had 97, 98 submissions.
Wow.
But, you know, again, if they don't grab me in that first page, and there's some, and it's taken me forever, but I'll sit and read them, all of it, and it's like, wow, and if it grabs me, it's in, but literally that, you know, is a tip for any budding authors out there. You know, you got to grab the likes of me within the first page.
Yeah, definitely me too. I am definitely like that. But, you know, there have been times that, you know, I will accept one. And then when I actually get down to start reading it, I'm like, please let this be a good one. And then I finish it, I'm like, wow, that was amazing. And I'm so happy when that happens, you know. So it was great. And I have to say that all of the stories in the Dark Romance anthology are just awesome. They really are awesome. And
excellent.
That cover, I could not be happier. I'm just glad that, you know.
And that should be out certainly in the next few weeks. I think we're just waiting on you to write the foreword. So you need to put your finger out. You need to do that.
Yeah, I know. I haven't written. I have to do the little tweaks there for the people who are saying, on page 43, I want this word instead of this word. You know that, those, you know. So anyway,
yes,
I have to.
Yes, it's always a joke. Although, see, my favorites are the ones that decide to completely rewrite. You know, you sent them the
yes.
manual, you sent it out to the office to proofread it, and they come back and say, I've made a few changes, and they've rewritten the whole damn thing. And it's all different.
That's
it's like, no, that's not what you're supposed to be doing here, you know. But
know.
And we have it's planned in time for Christmas. Sorry, the C word. Our first non-fiction anthology, which I'm really excited about. We've got some phenomenal names. Ramsey Campbell is actually in it as well. Chad Lutsky. I think I'm writing the forward. That's the only way I could squeeze myself in. Brett McCormick, funny enough, who is our guest this evening, is in it. It was absolutely phenomenal. We're working with Crystal Lake, with Joe Meinhardt from Crystal Lake on that one. So, and then funnily enough, it's like, you know, 3 years of no non-fiction and then two come along at once. So, and then early in the new year, we have another non-fiction, which is a non-fiction piece about the Video Nasty phenomenon back in the 1980s, which will resonate with, I think, every horror fan, because every horror fan refers back to the 1980s as the golden age of schlock horror. So, yeah, again, that's what I like about how we dare to be different. We don't give a crap what anybody thinks or what they say. We will stick our neck out.
They're going to say it anyway. Yeah, people are going to say it anyway, so we might as well, be ourselves.
Bearing in mind, as we said on our last show, we've just launched the first issue of our of the Hellbound Books comic book, which is called Bound for Hell, which is being incredibly well received. So I like it. You know, we dare to be different, which is you know, credit to us. I think we're great.
We are.
In all modesty, I think we're phenomenal. Phenomenal.
We are.
You know. Anywho, and I've given the surprise away, but I'm gonna let you because I always ask what have we got coming up this evening, Xtina?
I'm excited that he agreed to come back. I mean, you know, he's been on the show before, and
well, he should know better, to be honest.
Yes,
he's been on before. He really should know better. You know, seriously.
Yeah.
You got a question this time. It's like we had Jeff Strand on. How many times has Jeff been on now? I mean, what is wrong with that man? I mean, what is his problem?
We're just that awesome. That's what I'm thinking.
He cannot be well. Well, yes, we are. I concur. But to be honest, I'm going to let you introduce him.
Okay. Tonight on our show, we have filmmaker, artist, and author Brett McCormick.
And metaphysician, you missed that bit out. Do you want to do it again?
Did.
do it again, and we'll edit that out in post, okay? And tell me, Xena, who do we have on this week?
Tonight on our show, we have filmmaker, artist, author, and metaphysician, Brett McCormick. Woo!
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
There he is.
You are that. I have to, metaphysician. Are you? Could you explain? Would you like to explain that?
Well, a metaphysician is a person who is interested in exploring the fringe aspects of reality and what lies beyond the mainstream narrative or consensus reality. Maybe someone who is interested in the paranormal, for instance, or angels or spirits, that sort of thing.
Sounds groovy.
That sounds great. Yeah, I like that. I like that. So, I mean, is it something you're active? Do you go sort of, you know, ghost hunting and that sort of thing? Or is it just something you like to study?
Oh, I'm sorry. What was that? I didn't get that.
I say, is it something you are active in? Do you go ghost hunting and go on, you know, spiritual, haunted walks or that sort of thing? You go hunting, looking for things, or do you just sort of...
James,
it?
I don't feel like I go looking for them. I feel like they come looking for me.
I like that.
I'm glad they don't come looking for me, I'll tell you. I couldn't handle it, no. You know, I see those questions all the time where people are like, you know, have you ever seen a ghost? Or, you know, I'm happy to say I haven't, and I'm hoping to keep it that way.
Do you tend to believe that ghosts exist, or are they simply figments of people's imaginations?
I believe there's stuff out there. Yeah,
I want to believe. I would love to believe, but I think because of, I guess, the way my brain works, and I'm a scientist by education, you know, I need to see proof. I would love to see a ghost, seriously, or a werewolf or something. But sadly, I can't say I have, obviously I've imagined plenty, but no, and I feel that's a sort of something missing in my life.
See, Brett, yeah. you mentioned like angels, and so if you believe in angels, see, you know, you believe in like demons, and that I think is what, you know, I think that oftentimes if someone were to think that they've seen a ghost or something, in my belief it's a demon, which makes it scarier for me, you know. So that's, you know,
you think a ghost is automatically a demon? And what do you think a demon is? I mean, where do humans fall on the spectrum if there are demons and angels?
Demons are on a different spectrum because demons were never humans.
How do you know that? I mean, what scientific proof do you have for that, sir?
I read it on the internet, so I've studied your sort of demons and whatnot, and I'm pretty damn sure that they were. I see them as like a different species. I think demons and angels are on the same spectrum. Humans, I think, are different. Because obviously, I mean, the demon, I mean, obviously Satan, you know, if you take get biblical now, you know, Satan was, you know, an angel.
Angels.
So really, I mean, demons are fallen angels, I guess, for want of a better phrase. I think humans exist on a different plane, almost like, you know, we have humans and apes, you know, that separates us from the apes. We are separated from the demons and the angels. That's how I see it. Funnily enough, I've just ghostwritten a book for a lady, and it is about angels. So I've actually studied up on angels and the theories behind them. Not in a biblical way either. Angels as you know, as beings, as ascensions of the human spirit, and it's quite a philosophical piece. I'm kind of proud of it, but it kind of makes you think. Like you're saying, until, you know, an angel comes down from wherever they come down from and buys me a pint of beer, I'm forever going to be skeptical, I'm afraid.
I think an angel probably wouldn't need to buy you one. Maybe he would just manifest one for you or something.
as a metaphysician,
I tend to think that consciousness is primary, and that all the phenomena that we consider the material world or universe arises out of consciousness. And I believe that demons and angels are just aspects of that consciousness as we are. And being humans is just a matter of subtracting certain elements from that consciousness so that we're not aware of other things. So we get this chance to pretend that we're these physical beings on this planet for a time.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I think I need a drink. That was really deep.
You need one.
Yes.
I think she's had enough, Brett, to be honest, between you and I. I think she has had more than enough.
Maybe that's what it is.
Have another drink, Xtina. You've earned it.
I have.
She's earned it in so much as she's finished one bottle. That's you know, she's achieved that much. She achieved the empty bottle. So anyway, Brett, I mean, it's absolutely great to have you on the show again. Wonderful to have been able to work with you a lot this year. You've sort of been very prolific with us. Obviously, Texas Roadkill Volume 4, which was kind of your baby with ER Bills. And so Volume 4 is out, officially launched. This Saturday, we're having a physical release party, which I'm excited about.
I'm really looking forward to that, yeah.
I am. We've got a bunch of the featured authors turning up, and Fleur Fine Books is always a great people there are fantastic, and they love us to bits, which is great. They're very supportive of local authors. Obviously, Skin Dreams was launched a couple of weeks ago, and before that we had... the Toilet Zone. So you'd be very busy,
and you guys have been just as busy because you put it all together and into a presentable form and get it out to the public. I want to mention that the Toilet Zone was nominated for a Bram Stoker Award.
Yes. How did that happen? Do we know who the culprit is? Because it certainly wasn't us.
I don't know who it was, but I assume it was one of the contributors. A lot of the contributors, I think, are members of the Horror Writers of America.
Yeah. No, that's great. It would be nice if we. It'd be just nice to get the recognition, you know. I must say, probably because of the you know the title and whatnot. I think it's probably one of my favorite anthologies so far, I'm reading the reviews. All the reviews are fantastic for it, and I think we've captured people's imagination by making each story sort of you know sit down length.
For a long time, I have felt like the sweet spot for horror is between 1,500. And 3,500 words. I think if you keep the story within that length, your chance of getting something truly horrifying is greatly increased, because sustaining horror of the length of a novel is a very difficult thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think some of the most impactful horror stories I've ever read are the shorts. I love short horror stories. It's whenever I discover a new author, you know, the first thing I do is get a shorts collection.
Right.
Because, you know, you get great variety. But like you say, you get nice, tight-knit, you know, bite-sized chunks of horror, which is fantastic. And it is. I mean, it is an art. I mean, Xtina will testify. I mean, I'm still... developing my short story. For me, a short story up until even recently was like, you know, 1,500 words. So like,
yeah.
not a short story, Jim. No, you need to get that down a bit, you know. And I'm learning. It is an art. It's a fine art. And like you say, you know, to get, you know, the character development and the story and the plot and the horror within, like you say, somewhere below 5,000 words is difficult. I mean, it is hard work.
You know, right. I never really thought about it because I love horror. And, you know, when I used to shop for a good horror book, you know, I was in the mood for something new and I would go to the bookstore, I always would look for, you know, the thickest book there, whatever the biggest one was, because I wanted to read it for a while. But, you know, and there are some great ones out there, but it is true when I'm reading a short story, I have most of the time when I'm reading a really good horror short story, I will, you know, that last line or that last whatever, you're like, oh, holy crap, did that just happen? Now, that does not happen to me as much when I'm reading a full-length novel. So I think you are right about it's hard to sustain that a horror all the way through a whole novel. So, yeah, I never really thought about it like that. Maybe I would stop picking out books that were 800.
I mean, that's right. You know, speaking from a writer's point of view, you know, to sustain it, and then you've got to think, okay, you know, I've written, you know, like 10,000 words and really nothing frightening's happened, you know, and you just sort of, then it can become a bit forced, you know, you think, oh, I've better put a scary moment in, and it can be, I'll tell you what, one of the most difficult things, our good friend Kevin J. Kennedy, over in Scotland, bless him, he produces these books, 100-word drabbles. And literally, I've had two. I remember because he invited me to submit, and I sent one in. He said, "Yeah, you know, that, it's good, it's good." He said, "You can submit up to five." No, I can't. It was. I have to say, creating a story in 100 words, it has to be 100 words, was the hardest thing I've ever done. The second one was a little bit easier. But again, it was that would have been for me at least a 7,000-8,000 word short story, or even a novella. You know, it would have been it was that like that was the idea. And I will expand it one day. But yeah, to condense it to 100, so every word has to count. And try it. Give it a. Have you ever tried anything like that, Brett?
Yeah, I've done that. I had a couple of super short pieces published, a couple of years ago. It was called Bards and something, the publication, I can't remember, but the word Bard was in the title. And they bought two very short pieces of flash horror fiction from me. And it was very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I tried. Kevin as well had asked me, and I tried, and I actually had something that I thought, this is interesting, I really like this, and I sent it to him, and he's like, it is really good, but this is just a scene, it's not, and I was like, you're right, and I was like, yeah, that's it, I'm good, I'm, I can't do it.
Yeah, it is.
I had a scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the same as just, you know, it's like writing some back jacket blurb, you know, it's got to be a full self-contained story, and it is like, wow. Yeah, he's not asked me again, but I don't think it took me longer to put that together than it did to write a short story, to be honest.
Of course, yeah.
But I mean, I got the story down. Of course, it started, it was like 500 words. I've got to get this down to 100, and it's like, oh, it took hours. It really did. It took hours.
Yeah, I can imagine because, you know, for a writer, you know, your words count. You want, you know, and you use your words to describe everything. And if you have to cut it down to just the basics, I mean, sometimes that's not easy to do. You know, there's a sentence.
It's great discipline in brevity. You know, again, obviously, you know, even mainstream writers tend to be very wordy and almost waffly, and you know, I like to make every word count.
You got to have a balance though, because you don't want to get too wordy to where, you know, I'm bored, but then at the same time I need a little bit of meat. You know, I don't like just the it's got to be a balance in there, I think.
I found Dan Brown is very you know, there's not an awful lot of waffle. It's just bump, 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 bump. Very short sentences, very dirt, dirt, dirt. And I find that a bit jarring. Yeah, I do. I like a bit of. I think that's why I like Stephen King, because you get that nice mix. You great storytelling, and you know, he sort of builds out the characters, and you've got that nice.
Oh God, that's
the nice waffly bits in between that help, you know, push it along. Mm. So just the right, or mostly just the right balance for me.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people must agree with you, judging from his book sales.
Yeah, I think he has done rather well.
Yeah,
he's sold a book. It's funny when I take the kids to the movies. You know, it's difficult to find a movie that's not based on a Stephen King book or doesn't have Finn Wolfhard in it. You know, it's like some days well, there's nothing we can see then, nothing.
Right.
Either one of you read anything of his recently? I mean, well, like, what would be probably the last thing you've read by Stephen King?
The last thing I read was Revival, which did not like. It was just, it just seemed almost like, I don't know, it was just a throwaway, I guess. The last good thing of his I read was the Kennedy time travel one.
Oh, yeah. You know, I did not read that, but I saw the miniseries, which was really good. So I probably should pick up the book.
They did really well, but the book is 10 times better.
Mm, yeah. Mm. Yeah, the last thing for me was Under the Dome, which I think I still have a weak wrist because of how, and I, you know, read that in hardcover. So
what about you, Brett? Do you read Stephen King?
I did the time travel one where he goes back for the Kennedy assassination, and I also, after that, I read The Outsider.
Ah.
Oh,
what'd you think?
Which was pretty grim, yeah.
Yeah? Oh,
yeah.
Is it worth a read?
If you're a Stephen King fan, I think you would like it. Yeah, it's an interesting concept. I have gradually, over the years, gotten to the point where I feel like the Dan Brown approach is a little bit better than the Stephen King approach. That's just my personal, you know, I'm not a big Dan Brown fan, but that style of writing that's kind of to the point and doesn't meander around as much as King does. And I find King goes off on tangents and gets a bit redundant sometimes. I'm pretty sure that's because his publisher is demanding a certain word count, and he's certainly able to fill the pages with words in a big hurry. The guy, his output is incredible.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I like the detail. I really do. For me, the more detailed, the more immersed I can get into the story. So when I am, you know, and it's been a while since I've picked up a Stephen King book, but I mean, in any book, if it, you know, there's a lot of detail and they're telling me, you know, all sorts of things, I sink deeper and deeper into the pages, it seems like, instead of when I'm reading something that doesn't have quite as much detail, I kind of feel like I'm just kind of hovering and just watching from a distance. But when I read, I want to be a character. I do. I want to feel like this is happening. So,
right.
I definitely like the and also I love getting to know the characters. I love a good, you know, character development. There, and that I think is the one thing that people don't they don't practice or they don't do justice enough when it comes to short stories is the character development, because you know, as with anything I read, I want to care about what I'm reading. I want to care about the people, and if I can't feel for them at all, I'm just, you know, I'm like, that was a good story, but I didn't feel it, you know? So, I mean, I definitely want that character stuff going on. So let me know about his weird Aunt Sylvia who played weird harmonica music at night. You know, I mean, it doesn't do anything for the story, but it lets me know I want the weird details. So.
So.
Right, right.
So I want, you were here to talk to us about your book, Skin Dreams, which I have read and I thought was freaking amazing. And that cover too. Oh my God, I love that cover. It just makes me feel like, you know, I'm back in the 80s or something, and I love the feel of it. So,
you guys did an excellent job on the cover design. Thank you for that.
All credit to the artist. You know, Carlos did a phenomenal job. I'm really, really pleased with that. Yeah, it was your. Your mental imagery, Brett.
I'm glad he certainly was able to put it together. Yeah, it was definitely inspired by schlock movies that I had seen in the past, and a friend of mine, SF Brownrigg, did a movie called. It was originally called Death is a Family Affair, which was a crappy title, but I think at the time Family Affair was a very popular television show, and I think he thought that would somehow translate into some familiarity with the audience. Then it was released under the title Scum of the Earth, which I thought was a pretty good title, and eventually it got into the hands of a man named Michael Ripps, who was a distributor all throughout the South at the drive-in theaters, and he had had success with a film 10 years earlier called Poor White Trash. So he just sort of arbitrarily, since there were some sort of hillbilly characters in the film, he decided to call it Poor White Trash Part 2, even though it had nothing to do with the original film. And,
awesome.
And they made a lot of money off of that film at the drive-in. And it really... kind of has a big B-movie reputation. And I was trying to think if you carried the whole white trash thing forward into the present day, what would it look like? And actually, white trash, trailer trash, hillbillies, those sort of people, they're sort of like the last unprotected sector of our society. Seems like it's still okay to poke fun at them and make jokes about them and everything without any fear of being reprimanded for it, you know?
Yeah.
We sort of protected every other aspect of society, but not so much them. And I think living in sort of backwoods or small town community without a lot of education and operating in a way that's outside the modern norm is getting harder and harder because of computers and smartphones and all of that sort of thing, you know? So they are a vanishing breed, and I felt like we needed to have, like, one last hurrah for them or something. So I created this character, Sadie, who was a victim of child abuse and ended up murdering her stepfather when she was only 10 years old. Spends most of her life in a mental institution, and when she gets out, she feels like she needs to catch up for lost time because she knows she doesn't want to live the kind of very sedate, neutral life that the state authorities would like for her to experience. She runs away to Austin to become a tattoo artist, and that's where we get the title Skin Dreams, but the subtitle is Poor White Trash Part 3.
I love Sadie. Yes, I definitely love Sadie, and I want to talk more about her, but I want to hear the excerpt first, and then I'll tell you how much I love Sadie. So do you have an excerpt for us, Brett?
Yeah, I'm going to read an excerpt. It's the opening of the novel. It's at the very beginning. I wanted to kind of set the tone for the novel and give the reader some insight into her character. So I'll just read a little bit about that.
Okay.
Novel opens with, "They call me Liza McWhorter." Notice how I say they call me. Some folks will say my name is, or I am, but I don't go about it that way because I realize the name was given me by ignorant people. They gave me that name for reasons of their own, because that's just the way things are done in the here and now. These folks have no grasp on the vastness of life, even their own lives. They call me Liza because that was the name of my mother's favorite aunt. Liza is followed by McWhorter on account of that's the last name of the man legally considered my father. But even that's a lie. Mama told me Dan McWhorter wasn't my true daddy. She just married him so we'd have a roof over our heads. The man who shot his seed between my mama's legs and called me down from the soulless realm into this veil of shadows was the Reverend Archibald Gooch, pastor of the Zion Hill Church of Redemption. Brother Archie, most folks called him. They all said he was a very godly man, but he wasn't above the temptations of the flesh. He seduced Mama the same day he baptized her in the pond behind the church. My mama was a pretty woman, at least by local standards. Folks said she had the prettiest smile and that she probably could have been a movie star. I suppose it's only normal that a healthy man, man of God or not, would want to take a poke at her. Everyone thought the man was a pillar of the community, salt of the earth, even if he was susceptible to an occasional sexual temptation. Even my mama spoke well of him, carrying the burden of my illegitimate birth on her own young shoulders. No one suspected just how deeply flawed old Brother Archie really was, not until much later. I ain't in my heart Liza McWhorter. And even if Brother Archie had married Mama like church folk believe should be done, I wouldn't be Liza Gooch, not in my heart. In my heart, I know myself to be a soul, nameless and eternal, just like all souls and like the good Lord himself. It's only for these short little visits on planet Earth that we have need of such thing as names. And I've had a lot of visits and a lot of names. Most of them wouldn't mean a thing to you, except for one. If you're God-fearing and Bible-reading, you might know it. Amos, one of the 12 minor prophets. That was me in another time, on another mission. Now, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is true, and I don't care if anyone else on God's green earth knows it, believes it, or gives a blessed damn about it. But folks are touchy about certain things, and religion's one of them. Most run-of-the-mill Christians in our part of the country don't believe in what these days is called reincarnation. Souls returning again to earthly life is most definitely mentioned in the good book, but Christians don't read their scriptures very carefully. They usually just let their pastors do the reading and interpreting for them, and pastors generally don't endorse the idea of rebirth. It undermines their most potent tool, you know, the fear of eternal damnation. The only thing that keeps people coming back to the church week in and week out and contributing their hard-earned money is the fear of the fiery pits of hell. Hell with a capital H, if you're real serious about it.
And that's when you're going to stop, isn't it? That's just mean to do to us. No, you know, I have got to say, when I started reading this and I remember thinking how well you do Sadie. Like, okay, Sadie is, what was she in her, in 1920-ish? That, you know, she was young, and she was kind of innocent. I mean, even after the things that she had been through, there was still a certain innocence about her. And, you know, you are nothing, I mean, for real, you're nothing like Sadie, but it was so believable. I mean, I was like, I mean, I have read books before, you know, like a male author, you know, talking as a woman or talking as a girl or whatever. And in the back of your head, you're like, that's nothing a woman would say. That's nothing a girl would say. But, you know, as I'm reading this, I'm like, you know, I've talked to this man before, but he's Sadie right now. That was the coolest thing for me. I thought that was so I have to give you definite props for that.
Sadie sounded like a legitimate female?
Oh, my gosh. She was a real person. Yeah, Sadie was awesome.
Oh, good. Yeah. Very good. Maybe I did my job right then. Thank you.
You did. I was a big Sadie fan, too. I was. I loved her. She was great. And there were, you know, times that she said something, and I was like, oh, bless your heart. Because, you know, even though, like I said, even though she bends some shit,
she still was innocent. You know, she still had an innocence about her that she retained. So, you know, and she took things more literal, I think, than, you know, some people. So, I don't know. I thought she was great. And the whole story was just awesome. And I hate to say, we have to go to a short break real quick, just commercials and a song, and I have to pee. So don't go anywhere, and we will be right back, okay?
All right, sounds good.
Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Creeping up behind, you're out of sight. I got this. darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell.
Welcome back to part two.
Yeah, I have not heard that song for so long. It's hell good after all this time.
Yeah, you know, I have a story about this song, and it's a sad one, and it's just because when I was the age that this song came out, I wasn't allowed to listen to, you know, this kind of music. I had to listen to just Christian music, and that was it. So,
oh wow!
I know. I had a best friend, and she had the red jacket with the zippers all over it. And,
yep.
You know, she thought she was so cool. And she was singing Thriller one day. And I was like, what is she doing? I had no idea at all because I had not heard the song. And, yeah, so sad.
Oh, that's terrible. I don't understand parents who do that to their children. I mean, we mentioned the week before, the guy who dragged these kids out of the Addams Family movie. Because he wanted to make his point that it promoted Satanism, which was absolute poppycock, or rot, as we would say on the show. It was rot.
Yeah, it's all rot.
You know, and yeah, you know, I took my kids to see it, you know, and the
yeah,
good boys.
Baby.
I am a big believer in just, you know, the world is out there, and I think that the sooner the kids I prepared for it to face it and know
yeah,
it's out there.
You know, I brought my kids up in church. You know, they're older and they're whatever. Anyway, and there was this family that my daughter used to go play with. She used to go to their house and she'd come back and she'd be like, Mom, it's like a little house on the prairie. You know, they don't watch any TV but stuff like Little House on the Prairie. And I'm thinking, you know, for that kind of stuff, how are they preparing their kids for the outside world? I mean, they're not in, what is it? They're not Amish, you know what I mean? So they are going to have to deal with the real people, you know, eventually. So, and these, you know, they were the same age as my daughter was. And, you know, she would just be like, it's so weird there.
It's speaking as a parent, you know, I mean, it's people inflicting their beliefs onto their children, and I don't think that's fair. You know, again, as a parent, you know, I've got more had more kids over the years than I'm going to confess to, and I believe, you know, I want them to experience what's out there and develop. I mean, you know, they're well rounded. They sadly, as cynical as I am these days, but they know that life's shit and people are crap and trust no one, and that's the life lessons that they're gonna that's gonna stand them in good stead, to be honest.
Yeah, 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 you know, I mean, people that, you know, censor what their kids watch or what they read and stuff. And yeah, my son, he's reading freaking, you know, crazy old. You know, and the funny thing is, you know, he reads, the stuff that he reads, I can't even. I tried to pick it up once and a page in, I'm like, I have no idea what's going to go, you know, what's happening here. I don't understand how you read it, but, you know, it's got, you know, it's a Russian literature stuff. And, you know, the people are drinking vodka at like 9 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, so if I was, you know, censoring that, I'd be like, I don't think this is a good book for you. And there's murder going on and mayhem and, you know, but hey, he's reading, so I'm happy.
Hey, you need to nurture that.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't care what it is, as long as he's reading.
I have to ask Brett. Obviously, you know, we're talking about books and what have you, and Brett being a tremendous filmmaker. I mean, what is your preferred medium, Brett? Is it film or is it books?
I have to say books because. I think very good creative endeavors almost always come from a single mind. I think when you begin, filmmaking is so collaborative, so many people have their say from the distributor down to the producer to the director, and the writer is always angry because his story gets spun off in different directions that he never intended. And when I was doing films, I was doing them on incredibly low budgets, which was possible because home video was a new thing, and there was a large appetite for new films. And so even though I was doing these things on super low budgets, there was always a venue for them out there somewhere, a distributor with a slot that needed to be filled. And that was going on all over the world. So, So it was fun for a time and it was exciting for a time, but I really think in terms of, like actually enjoying the process and really getting into it and getting lost in it, that nothing compares to writing. I really look forward to that part of the day when I write.
That's awesome.
I used to be tearing my hair out halfway through the day when I was making films.
You know, I used to read all the time, and I mean, I was never without a book, and I loved it. I really did. And then the last few years, you know, life happens and you get busy, and I wasn't reading, and it was like except for, you know, I have to do it for work, but I mean, as far as, you know, for enjoyment, I did not read for years and I missed it. And just recently I started picking it up again, and I'm thinking to myself, how did I let this go for so long? But I've definitely been enjoying reading, and I've notice too that I don't know if it's an age thing or if it was just your taste change, or they, you know, they're, because I used to read all sorts of different kind of things, but it's like lately all I want to read is psychological thrillers, and you know, give me and I love the twists, and I think that's one of the things that I love so much about, you know, the short stories, is there's always that, pretty much anyway, that twist. There, you know, right at the end, you're going to get that twist and be like, oh my gosh, what just happened here? You know, and I love that. And I guess I don't understand people who don't like to read. And I definitely think that reading and writing normally go hand in hand. But, you know, I don't know. I think
before television in the early part of the 20th century, there may have been a larger percentage of the population reading than there is now. But we need to keep in mind that literacy was across the board was a fairly new phenomenon then, too. In the 19th century, most of your average citizens barely read, if at all, you know?
Wow.
That's true, yeah.
So you think that now that, you know, people are way more literate, they don't read because it's just a...
Well, I think they just
there.
Have so many choices of where and how to read. You know, you've got the internet, which you could spend every minute of the rest of your life reading on the internet and consuming just an incredible amount of information that was never accessible to you 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's one of the cool things about the toilet zone is because I do think that these days people are reading in smaller increments, you know, smaller. And that's why, you know, you have the, you know, when I was younger, it was the big books, 500 pages. And now you've got the novelettes and you know, the novellas. And, you know, there's what there's something even smaller than that, I think, and then short stories. And people are... I think that they're, you know, maybe it's an attention span thing. You know, they don't have the attention span to sit there for a novel. So a short story is going to do. And so I think everybody should read The Toilet Zone. You know, you have time for a short story.
Well, it's reading, son.
I have edited 5 anthologies now. And wow. Toilet Zone was by far the most pleasant experience because the submissions came in from all over the world. They were very diverse in their approaches and their styles, but there were really a large number of them that continued to play over and over in my mind and haunt me for a good time afterwards. And I think that's the sign of a really good horror story. So we got a better than average batch of submissions for that anthology, and I'm very grateful for that.
Awesome. It looks like we have a caller.
A caller.
Yeah.
Shall we?
I know. We did.
I'm hoping it's the confused lady we had on a few months ago who called in for a completely different show. She was phenomenal. I want her to ring every week. She's not wrong. So it might be her. Let's see who we've got. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear
Hello.
Me?
Hello. Yeah, we can. Thank you for joining the new Panic Room. I presume it's Brett you want to speak to.
Yes, it was. But also, hello, James. Hello, Brett. Hello, Tina. My name is Todd Sullivan. Hi. I've actually published you guys before.
I know the name.
Oh,
yes.
I recognize the name. Nice to speak to you.
Thanks for calling in, Todd.
Thank you, guys. No problem. I'm calling, though, for a question for Brett. I just brought Skin Dream, and I've been reading it. And I was thinking of Yori that was in the Schlock Horror anthology, King of the Tortured Dead. And I really like how you put the metaphysical elements in it. But I was wondering, do you find it difficult to put that into your fiction and still keep the narrative moving smoothly and like fast?
Well, I'm going to let you be the judge of whether or not the narrative moves quickly enough. Some people think so and some people don't. To me, there's nothing more interesting than considering the aspects of expanded reality that most people want to ignore and pretend don't exist. But reincarnation and spirits and alterations in time and all of these things are, when you listen to the people who are the quantum physicists who are really on the cutting edge of quantum theory, they say that there really is no space and time, that it's just a mental habit that humans developed in order to survive. So everything in reality is happening all at once, and all of it is subject to our conscious manipulation. And if it seems like things aren't going the way we want them to, it's because we're all here doing it at the same time, and frequently other people are other people are sending out signals that are countering your own. All of those things are so fascinating to me that that's really what I want to talk about. But I've been involved in horror so long that that's kind of the genre that I have to wrap it all up and to say the things that I want to talk about.
Well, I mean, I definitely have found it very engaging. I've gotten maybe into the first 20 pages of Skin Dreams, and I'm definitely like really caught into the story. So definitely you added the metaphysical elements in a very engaging way for me, at least.
Thank you.
Yeah, no
do you
problem.
Feel like do you feel like Sadie is a believable female character? I know you're a guy.
No,
but...
I do. Right, but I definitely do feel that Sadie is a very believable character, and I really enjoy the journey that she's on right now with her, and then her grandmother manifesting herself to her at certain points in time, and her grandmother kind of has a, I don't want to give away the story to anyone. It just seems to me that I find Sadie to be a very engaging character, actually. I'm really looking forward to see how it continues to develop with the tattoo place and, you know, what happens to her along the way.
Thank you,
Dad. Yeah, you know, I no even problem. Had to say, and you heard me talk about how much I love Sadie, but for real, when I started reading and I got further into Sadie, there was a moment that I was like, Brett McCormick, Brett, he is the right, Brett, are you sure I'm not reading a female writer? I mean, because she was so, I mean, yeah, I don't know how you got into her head as well as you did, but you were Sadie when you were writing her part. So, no, that's very believable. And I'm a girl, so I know.
Excellent. I'm glad you feel that way.
Well, I thank you very much for calling in, Todd. And, you know, you should listen to the show all the time and call in because those are really cool questions. I could just sit back and drink more wine and have you ask some really cool questions.
Hey, yeah, we could retire. We could retire. Just have the evening off.
Well, thank you. Thank you, James. Thank you, Tina. Thank you,
Thank you so much. Absolutely like to speak to you. Okay. Speak to you again. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye. So I just want to pick up on that, Brett. I mean, obviously, I mean, writers, you know, we do try to get into the heads of different characters. I mean, how easy did you find it to be Sadie?
I find it very easy. In fact, I think probably because of the meditation and the ideas that I have about consciousness and what it really is as opposed to all these individual beings out here. I think when I put myself, I just show up at the keyboard and I identify the character that I want to write about, and then I just let the character reveal itself to me. And it seems to happen fairly effortlessly. I wrote that book in probably less than 200 hours of work, so I don't know how long people normally spend writing a book, but yeah, something like that.
Wow. It looks like we have another caller.
Excellent.
So, yeah,
right? As they say in the biz, the switchboard is lighting up, so here we go. Here we go. Hello.
Hello.
Hello,
how are you?
I'm very good. How are you? Hello.
I'm great. This question's for Brett. So I've been following your film career for a little bit. Reanimator Academy, tell me about that one.
What would you like to know about Reanimator Academy?
That's one of the ones you directed, correct?
Well, for many decades, when people would ask me about Reanimator Academy, I would pretend I didn't know what they were talking about because it was, even for me, a super low-budget thing that David Dakota, who's kind of a famous guy for doing a bunch of horror films, he hired me. He had his own video label, and he hired me to do two shot on video productions that we really shot like literally over the course of one weekend. So if you've never seen Reanimator Academy, I don't think you want to. And if you have seen it, you understand why I didn't put my name on it.
Well, I want to find this film and watch it. Why is it that bad? Is it that terrible? Or
Yeah, I think it's pretty awful, James.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna find it.
It wasn't that bad. It was like it had its quirks. I mean, as a director, did you ever shoot anything blue? Like some, you know, did you ever do naughty skin flicks or anything like that? Or
well, I knew people who did, and there was certainly a time when I would not have been opposed to doing that. But as much of a struggle as the other films I was doing were, they paid better than any of the deals I saw out there for porno film directors. So I just didn't really want to get off into that world.
Yeah, it's funny because I was reading an article during the writer's strike where all these film producers were trying to get into porn because they didn't have any jobs because it was just like all of a sudden the whole thing dried up for them. And that
right.
was kind of a fascinating thing. It's like, how much money could you possibly make? And, you know, they were kind of disappointed to find out it wasn't as lucrative as they thought it would be.
No, I think it's kind of forbidden fruit. And I think people who are standing outside that culture have a very different view of it than people who have actually worked in it. And after having spoken with some friends who did work in it, I could tell it wasn't something I wanted to do. And a lot of the people, especially back then, that you dealt with when you were shooting porn were very unsavory people that you didn't, you know, you certainly didn't want to ever make them angry.
Yeah, was that going to get whacked in a different sort of way? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
I've got to ask, I've had involvements in the adult industry back in my dim and murky past. And it's funny, as soon as the issue comes up, everything you say becomes a double entendre. And it's just, you just can't help it. We've got whacking off and a dry spell. And it's just like, it becomes unavoidable. I don't know. We just kind of slip into it, as it were.
And people do love their double entendres, don't they?
Yeah, you know,
yeah,
one of my favorite, and I hope it translates from over the pond, a favorite jokes of all time was a great comedian, Ronnie Corbett, said my girlfriend asked me for a double entendre, so I gave her one. And it's just such a simple, great joke. I love that. It might not translate over here, but it makes me laugh.
Yeah. You also
that Abomination movie. So how did Donna
yeah.
and Michelle get a hold of that? How did that happen?
I get asked about that a lot. Donna Michelle was a video distributor that was known, I think, primarily for distributing gay porn films, but they decided to put out a line of horror films at one point. And at the time that deal was struck, I was no longer involved. I had written and directed the film, but when my partner and I split up, we divided up the assets, and he ended up with that. So that would be a question that Matt Devlin would have to answer. I think he probably went to the Video Software Dealers Convention in Las Vegas and connected with those people, and they picked it up, but I really don't know the details.
Well,
how did you
I
feel
hate...
about that?
How do I feel about it?
Yeah.
I think it was great because Donna Michelle, for the time that they were distributing horror, had a very high profile. A lot of people saw the film, and I get friend requests all the time on Facebook from people that are probably 20, 30 years younger than me who saw it as kids, and it just had this huge impact on them, and they think it's this great horror film. So it was a good thing for me in that regard.
Well, I hate to do this because I'm having such a good time. This is so much fun, and we should have made our show longer for tonight, but unfortunately we didn't, and we're about out of time. Brett, we have to get you back. We had another excerpt and everything, and I'm hoping you'll be able to come back like really, really super soon. So say
well,
yes.
Well, when I came on at the beginning of this program, you were telling me what a fool I was for coming back, and now you're telling me I should come back? I'm confused. I don't know what decision to make.
No,
the
we
right
don't.
One.
I was just saying, you know, we do question the sanity if people do come back, but it's always a pleasure. Absolutely always a pleasure. And, of
definitely.
Course, you know, the great reading public can see my good self and Brett's good self at Fleur Fine Books on Saturday 3 till 5, where we'll be, meeting and greeting and signing things. So do come
awesome.
Along.
Awesome. I want pictures. Yes, I want pictures.
There will
we'll
be
give
pictures.
You pictures. It'll be a good time.
And, Brett, I'll get your links put up on our Facebook page. If anybody wants to stalk you, they can go there and do that. And again, thank you so much for coming on. And I'm definitely going to stalk you and ask you to come back really, really soon. So we have no.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. Okay, Brett.
Thank you, Brett.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for everything.
Okay. And I will see you on Saturday.
All right.
Okay, Xtina, it is that time where we have to say goodbye, I'm afraid.
Oh. You said it wrong.
I'm sorry. We have to say goodnight. Sorry, we can fix it in post. It's time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
A child in the fall.